Hello and welcome to No Really I'm Fine. My name is Matt. I am the producer of the show. And yes, you're stuck with me today, I'm afraid. Gemma is away, so I'm filling in. Hopefully that's okay with you guys. But the conversation we have for you today is absolutely fantastic. I managed to speak to Bessie Turner, and Bessie is a musician. She puts out some fantastic music. She is also a mental health advocate, and she is very open about her own personal experiences and very open about her own mental health. And in 2018, there was a picture she posted on Instagram, which kind of picked up a lot of exposure and made its way into the news and whatnot. So we talk about that amongst many other things, from her upbringing all the way through to medication. And we do speak about the tragic loss of one of her friends. It really is a full-blown conversation. There is so much in there, and I think you will probably get a lot out of it. I certainly did when I had the conversation with her. I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm just going to let you listen. So this is a conversation I managed to have with Bessie Turner. So are you really fine today?
Borderline fine.
In what way?
No, I am fine. Fine's a funny word, isn't it? I'm definitely fine. I'm definitely okay. I think everyone's head's a bit conflicting and a bit of a kind of a no man's land at the moment, kind of with all things considered. But no, I am fine today. I've been decorating and sanding, and it's been nice to actually have something to focus on.
Just before this, you said you were decorating a pub.
I am, yeah. No, it's my boyfriend's family kind of have this pub in Canonbury in London, and we're just kind of giving it a bit of a whiz and a bit of a shape up before everywhere can reopen, which will be so lovely. So yeah, just fresh start.
Yeah, I think everyone's missing the beer garden at the moment.
Oh my God, it was really hard at the beginning, wasn't it?
So hard. To be honest, I don't think I've managed to curb my drinking that much. I've got a garden. So.
Oh, that's nice. Do you get the sun all day?
Exactly.
You're lucky.
Just sort of so that people have some sort of idea of who you are and the type of things you've had to deal with. Can you tell me a bit about what you've had to deal with mental health wise and what you do?
I am Bessie Turner. I am a musician. Well, that's what people kind of know me for. And I've spoken up quite bluntly about mental health, which has got me a little bit of recognition. And it's been really nice to kind of be able to help people. But no, I was brought up by two parents. My mother has borderline personality disorder. My dad has something the same, which is kind of, I mean, he's diagnosed as schizophrenic, but he doesn't like that. But so I've been brought up around a lot of kind of mental health issues and drug abuse and all sorts. And I think kind of being kind of exposed to that kind of makes you a little bit vulnerable. But it was also amazing because my parents were very good at kind of letting us know our feelings. But I've suffered with depression on and off for years and years and years, and had counselling since I was a teenager for lots of reasons. I had problems with eating, and I had quite bad OCD at one point. But I'm on a good level now.
Well, it's good to hear. What was your school life like? Did you know that you felt that something was up?
Yeah, I was very fearful in some ways as a child. I think that kind of my parents are both fantastic. My mum is like one of the best women in the world, but kind of seeing her be at one with kind of her struggles and live with those kind of made me a bit kind of, I don't really know, kind of you're always aware of it. I never felt quite normal compared to everyone else that I was at school with. I was brought up in a really white middle class kind of area in Suffolk, and I just never kind of felt like I quite fitted in with it.
During school, did you find a struggle then day to day?
Yeah, I really didn't like school so much. But with my primary school, I went to a tiny primary school. I think there was kind of a maximum of like 60 kids in it at any one point, which is quite crazy. And I never really felt that I fitted in. I used to pretend I was ill a lot, and maybe I was ill, you know, kind of maybe with my head. And the high school was kind of really good for me in some ways and really bad for me in others. I kind of made loads of friends, like kind of found myself a little bit. But you're a teenager and you're going through all kinds of things hormonally. I had lots of issues with that as well. And I was put on the pill when I was 11 years old because my periods were so erratic. So I think that's another thing that kind of women forget. It's kind of going on sometimes in the background the whole time of us living our lives. We've kind of got this mad cycle going on. And, you know, I don't know if we always get enough time to breathe, really.
Yeah, and it's not really spoken about that much. I was reading something from you just prior to this conversation of you saying you wouldn't be a teenager again if you were paid £1 million.
No, I don't think I would. It was just such a testing time. And I think that it is for everybody. I don't know, by the time I was a teenager, by the time I was 13, you know, I was having problems with eating. I was quite chubby as a child. And I think that I found so much comfort in food and used to overeat and then consequently bring it all back up again. And at the age of 13, I was still trying to manage my periods and kind of, I was having this kind of background neurological issues as well that were being investigated. And it was just hard, really hard, being like a chubby girl at school from kind of a poor background, but in a very wealthy area. I didn't have much confidence, and £1 million. It would have to be like 100 billion or something to be a teenager again. But I wouldn't even for that. I don't think. I think that everything happened for a reason, really.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has those experiences. Well, not those particular experiences, but have experiences during school that can be challenging. But what's eye-opening for me is during school, you never even think about the fact that people are going through all sorts of different things. And especially from a female point of view, I wouldn't have even thought about that, even to this day, until you said, you know, it's just like pure ignorance, really. But yeah, it's just something that doesn't get spoken about.
I think like our generation as well, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 26, and it was kind of the like magazine airbrush size zero culture. And I don't know, I spent my whole childhood life when like just willing to be older and kind of get through it all and not be this teenager or this child with all of these issues anymore. And then you get to that age, and over the past few years I've realized that you're kind of you're always your inner child, so you can never really escape it anyway. But you just have to make the most of what you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said obviously your parents both dealt with mental health issues. And so what was your family life like growing up?
My mum and dad split up when I was very young. They're both wonderful, wonderful people. They're kind of like these mad kind of hippie stoners from Suffolk. And they lived in quite an alternative way compared to a lot of other people. My dad was a painter and carpenter, and we used to see him sometimes on weekends. And we lived with my mum. I've got an older sister, Ruby, who I keep referring to as we. She's amazing. And we lived with my mum as a single parent, who was kind of, both my parents were on benefits as well, kind of just getting through day to day. We had amazing grandparents around us though that kind of made sure we had school uniform and that we were all okay. It sounds like a real sob story, but kind of I think that I had a good time. I had a good time kind of, it's quite funny kind of reflecting on it. I think that my relationships I went for years and years in certain phases of not speaking to my dad for a while and then not speaking to my mum. And kind of over the past year or so, everything's just really leveled out and we've just learned to kind of accept each other as for who we all are. So it's a bit funny kind of delving back into that and thinking that, oh my God, he was such an asshole, and oh my God, they're both junkies. But I've got to the age where I just have kind of let go of all of that. And they're still, you know, my dad still suffers quite bad with addiction and stuff. But that's how he is. And you just kind of need to be there for him in certain ways and preserve yourself first and foremost, which is what I've learned to do, kind of instead of worrying or caring about how other people are, I obviously am quite a caring person, like in general anyway. I don't want to sound like I'm just kind of self-centered, but I have learned that kind of my head and my health is more important than like anyone else's, really.
Yeah, well, it's kind of vital, isn't it, really? Because you have to put yourself first to be able to be there for other people. It can be quite hard when you don't even know how you feel yourself. Or
exactly.
Definitely take care of yourself first and foremost. I think that's probably something that a lot of us don't do enough, to be honest. Do you have any special like sort of self-care routines that you exercise to keep yourself sort of balanced?
Yeah, I do in some ways. Last year, 2019, was absolutely bonkers for me. I ended up in hospital for 2 weeks in February and then 1 week at the end of last year, December, just over Christmas. And each time I had sepsis, and the first time I had pneumonia, and I had these mad infections. And, you know, there were an amalgamations of kind of everything kind of going on in my life, I think. But I think that I was so stressed and just so burning myself out at those points that that's kind of one of the reasons that landed me literally in hospital, kind of with a intensive care nurse by my side all the time. So kind of since that, it's just learning to respect my body a lot more and take things at a slower pace. And I really love meditation. I don't do it near enough. I love yoga as well. Just getting out and walking is kind of, that's my time and my space. Just kind of walking and then letting my head kind of go on little tangents and think of words and writing. I can't kind of recommend to anyone enough. I keep these self-indulgent diaries that I hope no one ever reads or finds, but kind of just by writing things down about how I'm feeling is a form of therapy in itself, because I definitely can't afford therapy. I wish I could. And bless our NHS, our wonderful NHS, but their resources are so tied as well. It's not always a feasible thing to be able to rely on the NHS to kind of get a bit of help mentally there.
I have had therapy and been lucky enough to be able to pay for it. I mean, I struggled to pay for it at times, but yeah. I was lucky enough to be able to do it for a period and yeah, I wish that it was something that was more accessible to people, because it helps so much. Well, it helped me
completely.
So much. And I guess the next best thing is being able to air those things. And I think the thing for me was always figuring it out. It was always like working out where it came from or where something started in your life. If you have an issue with like loss, or if you have an issue with rejection or something like that, like working out what happened. It's such a relief when you figure it out, to the point where I would be in sessions like laughing my head off when it finally clicked.
It is funny. You know, I did see a private counsellor for kind of maybe about 4 or 5 sessions, and it was the best money that I ever spent when I was in a position to. And kind of I think that even just meeting someone for the first couple of times and kind of letting yourself be that vulnerable and that honest and open with somebody, I think even for someone to experience that, so many people never actually get the opportunity to just sit and be their full whole self with a complete stranger. And it's bloody scary, but I think it's very important. I think lockdown in some respects has been really good for kind of people's head spaces. I'm sure it's been the absolute opposite for some at some points as well, but I think that we live such a fast-paced life. Kind of when the pandemic started, once everyone was kind of over the first like what the fuck is going on bit, I think a lot of people have, you know, whether it's even like baking or cooking or coloring or doing a puzzle, like no one really gets to spend that much time with themselves. And I think that it's going to be a really healing thing to see how kind of we all are when we come out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And it is that whole self-care thing as well, isn't it? Because like you might find that baking is something you just really enjoy and you can get out of your head. And it's all stuff that is actually self-care things that you never would give yourself the time to do.
But it's been quite blissful at points that I've read like 7 books in lockdown. And I think I probably read about 2 last year. Reading's like one of my best favourite things in the world. But I think kind of either if you're working a job or if you're gigging or writing or playing music, whatever we're all doing, I just had such an issue, quite a control freak issue, with like not being able to kind of let myself relax really. I never really could even sit through a film. So it's been really nice to be able to kind of sit and watch and read and just be.
Definitely. When did you discover music was a thing for you?
From a really early age, I think. From a really early age, like as I have brushed over quite a chaotic upbringing with my parents, you know, both very addicted to drugs and lots of things going on in their own issues. And I just used to write and write and write. I was petrified to sing. And I was always so scared of anyone else hearing me sing. I used to sing into my pillow and things like that. But I kind of knew I could. It was kind of my like little secret that like no one knows, but I can actually sing. And I started writing music when I was really, really young. Like I've got old song books. I posted one on my Instagram actually a few months ago now, and it's so funny. Like I wrote a song called like Why Daddy Why, which sounds so bad. Like it, you know, he never done anything like that awful to me, like don't worry. But I kind of learned that music was a release really, really young. And then I got bought a guitar when I was, I think, probably about 11 or so, and I never had any interest in learning to play it, like to better myself at playing it, any more than like just accompanying myself with a song. And I'm exactly the same. I only ever learned just enough to be able to write to, and I'm kind of still at that level, to be honest. It's kind of my accessory to my songs and my writing. I couldn't really do one without the other. But I started performing quite seriously, I suppose, or kind of with a bit more confidence than absolutely none, just over a few years ago now. So there was a very long build-up, more than a 10-year build-up, that's for sure.
For you to build up the confidence to...
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
Would you say it's 10 years ago that you started getting serious with trying to write music?
Yeah, I suppose so. Kind of 10 years ago, I'd have been like 16. I'd have done like my GCSE music. I'd have been at sixth form going in about once every 2 weeks, like smoking a bit of pot, like just hating myself, living in a little caravan. but it was when, yeah, I think that I lived in Ipswich at the time, and there was like some open mic nights and stuff. And I got asked along to one of those because I kind of touched on the fact that, I sing a bit and I play guitar to some of my friends, and they're like, oh, we never heard you. I was like, yeah, I suppose I actually have to prove that that's what I want to do. And then I did take it quite seriously for a while. I really thought kind of, wow, I've got a skill. People seem to really love it. And, you know, people book me for shows, and, you know, this is really weird. And then I had a huge confidence blip kind of in my early 20s, and I was in quite an abusive relationship and just didn't know who I was. I don't know if we ever fully do, really. We constantly change and refine, don't we? But yeah, as of a few years ago, I was with a boyfriend at the time who was a drummer, and yeah, he was really into my music and what I'd done, and he really helped me kind of bring it out and show other people. So I'm very grateful to him for that.
You say you sort of learnt that writing was cathartic for you, right? Like just writing things down was cathartic mm-hmm. for you. I imagine that translated into the music pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
What interests me is the way that you can be struggling with something so dark and heavy, but when you have a creative outlet, the end result of that experience is something that can be so positive. Do you use your music to sort of exercise that at all?
Yeah, definitely. Like every time I write a song, especially if I'm writing on my own, I'll kind of come up with a little melody first. And that's why it's so important to kind of really be by myself and be relaxed. I'll come up with melodies, and I'll come up with all of my best stuff when I'm like washing up or showering or going on a walk. Like I've never sat down to be like, okay, I need to do something inspiring now. Like it needs to happen authentically. And then I'll sit with my guitar after I've come up this vocal melody, and then I'll usually open up one of my hundreds of kind of notebooks and be like, oh yeah, that sounds right there. And I definitely write songs for me, definitely no one else, which is why I find it so mad that other people love it. Donkey, for example, which I released a few months ago, I can't even really remember, but it's a song that was played quite a lot on BBC Six Music and people really loved it. But that is, that is about my friend who passed away last year. He hung himself. I was quite apprehensive about releasing it because all of a sudden I'd made this song with my friend Joseph and it was really good. Like, I'm really proud of it. And it's quite like this boppy little like angsty grungy song. And then it was like, oh my God, like we need to release this. Like, it's wicked. And then I was like, oh God, like no one actually knows what it's about. And I don't want anyone that does know me to like read into it and think that I'm kind of glorifying something from his death. Or that's kind of another thing with music as well. Kind of, I sometimes think, oh God, like my biggest fear, and I kind of close up and go weird, is somebody asking me like, oh, what's that about? And I really don't like that question. Like, everyone's totally valid to ask it, of course. But I was listening to an interview just on in the background with Kate Le Bon. Do you know her?
Yeah.
And I can't remember like who was interviewing her, but someone asked her like, oh, what's one of your songs about? And she was so sweet in her kind of in her delivery of it. But she was basically like, I'm not actually going to tell you really. Like, I write my songs for me and you should listen to them for kind of you, you know, kind of take what you want from it. And I kind of sat there and I was like, oh my God, like, she's got the balls to say it, because I'm always just like, it's a little bit about this, a little bit about that. But no, it's, yeah, I think that I take away from music what I need from it at that time and kind of reflect it onto my personal situations and my experiences and stuff. So
do you find that some of your songs that you might not have listened to for a while, if you listen to them now, just for nostalgia's sake, do you ever listen to them again and sort of get a new meaning from them?
Yeah. That first EP that I released a couple of years ago now, it's called 2222 on Spotify. I don't really listen to my own music very often, but kind of as a musician yourself as well, I'm sure you can kind of look back on what you've done in the past and just think, oh my God, Jesus, like you were such a scared, vulnerable little thing at that point. And like, I kind of look back on it with a lot of pride, to be honest, just that I even had the confidence to follow through with it. And I don't know, like Words You Say, for example, like that's kind of quite a sad song if you really listen to the lyrics, but I heard it pop on the other day on something, I don't really know what. I probably put it on myself on purpose, to be honest, because that doesn't happen very often, does it? But I was like, wow, like this is a bop, like this, you know, like you did good, like well done.
It's like an audio portrait of your life, really. I mean, obviously, I'm going to ask about the picture you posted on Instagram. Was it October in 2018, was it?
Yeah, it's so long ago now, yeah.
But it kind of blew up, and that was on World Mental Health Day. Can you tell me about that picture and why you posted it?
So I posted a picture of myself crying with a towel wrapped around my head, being all hopeless. And I can't really remember the caption so well, but I think I asked myself a rhetorical question, which actually my ex-boyfriend asked at the time. And he was like, why have you got a picture of you crying? Right. And I was like, actually, like, now I'm going to indirectly take out my aggression towards you and show it to the whole world. There's a squirrel out here. Sorry, I just got really distracted. So I kind of ended up posting it, which isn't a very good reason. It started as a bit of a fuck you to him. But I'd taken antidepressants in my early 20s, and I think that I have had a lot of trouble in my life, and it's been kind of peppered with all kinds of, you know, chaos and trauma. And I was so reluctant to go on antidepressants again. I tried CBD, I tried all of the exercise, but unfortunately and fortunately, I found something that works for me, and it is Prozac, which is brilliant. And that was the day that I started taking it again. And I just remember kind of sitting in the bath and thinking like, oh, Bess, like, come on, you can do this. Because I don't know if you've ever been on any medication, or if anyone listening is thinking about it. But it's such a two-sided thing, isn't it? My friend Ben, he hung himself last year and we're very close. And he was like, oh, like, what are you going on them pills for? Like, you don't need that stuff in your body, like, blah, 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 blah. And I remember being quite hurt at just his reaction to my decision. Like, you know, I was taking a step to better myself, but people kind of, I don't know, it depends how you look at it and stuff, but I just thought, actually, I've been very lucky with my parents to be completely open and honest and talk about depression and how I'm feeling. But it's just something that, you know, was never spoken about at school, not really in like friendship groups. So I just really wanted to open a conversation. And then a couple of months passed from when I posted the picture. And I had an interview with a journalist from Suffolk, who's a really good friend of mine now, called Richard Hoare. And he'd done a little piece for BBC News, and it got a lot of attention, which I was really baffled by. I was so baffled by it, because I was just doing something that I would have ordinarily done. And I wasn't doing it for anyone. I wasn't doing it for attention. And the attention was quite hard to deal with, to be honest.
Right.
But I'm glad that it all happened, and I'm glad that kind of some people kind of, when I've like walked out to festivals and stuff and you've got like a compere introducing you, sometimes people like mention like mental health, like, and I thought it was a bit corny one time when someone done that before I went and played some songs. But actually, I'm really proud that people associate me with being open and honest about it, because I think, you know, I'd much rather be recognised for helping people or being kind of an advocate of like self-love and stuff than music any day.
Mental health within the music industry is something that it's become a bit more vocal these days, I think. You know, tragic events of all sorts of people taking their own lives. There is some sort of relationship there between the music industry and mental health.
Definitely.
In your opinion, like, what do you think that link is?
In my position, it's kind of, I know people will listen to me kind of say this and they'll think, well, why on earth do you release music if you're kind of really scared and vulnerable and you can't kind of take what people have to say or anything? But you have to be bloody brave to try and be a musician. You have people judging you all the time. You have people come to your shows that have kind of, that are like big IAMs, and you get told that they're from this special place and, you know, they might be interested in you. And then you get to like deals and things, and then money becomes involved. And it's just a very, very, you're just very vulnerable. You kind of feel, you know, I feel like a bit of a brand sometimes, and then I kind of have to shake myself and reassure myself that I am Bessie Turner, but I actually also do have to be that brand. I do have to be that kind of the face of this kind of thing. I think that it's really hard for everyone in the music industry, as in any industry really. But yeah, I just think maybe there's not enough support. A lot is asked of you as a musician, and kind of a lot weighs on your shoulders.
What do you think the music industry should be doing more or less of to sort of lessen the negative impact? Or do you think they should be doing anything at all?
I think that every single job and every single sector in the world should be doing more. I think that, you know, like people in the government are definitely going to need some therapy after what's been going on now, and like all through the rest of time. Like, I think every industry needs to have kind of a really clear kind of mental health kind of awareness and message. And, you know, you should be able to go and speak to your teacher or speak to your boss and say, like, look, I'm really struggling. And kind of there should always be something in place, I think, so that you can feel supportive and have a bit more help. I'm really lucky. I'm with a management company. I haven't actually used the service, but I know that they have a therapist that I can speak to anytime.
Okay.
So even just knowing that is amazing. So I'm very lucky, and I think that I hope that that's kind of offered at all of the labels and stuff like that. Mm. To be honest, I would feel a bit funny maybe going to someone who knows my manager, and, you know, kind of there's that link there. But just even having the option is really nice.
Obviously, the situation being what it is with the pandemic and lockdown, and then not being able to perform and things like that, how have you managed that? And has it had an impact on you mentally?
Yeah, it definitely has. Like, I think that I can be quite scared anyway. Like, if I'm just sat with you as a friend, I'm quite kind of, I can be quite, I'm just myself the whole time and I can never be anything else. And that definitely reflects when I'm on stage as well. I'm not kind of all showy offy, look at me, I take this very seriously. And I think I'll be petrified, to be honest. I never really used to get nervous, but I think when shows and stuff start happening, I think everyone's going to be a bit on edge, kind of. You're going to be in a room with a lot of people. I don't really know, to be honest. It's been quite difficult not being able to play music with other people. That's been really hard, because one thing that I've been so lucky to have had over the past few years is people kind of encouraging me and being like, you know, don't dumb yourself down, or if I do something and write something by myself, or like, I had this idea but I don't know if it's very good, and people be like, oh my god, that's great, like, let's play it, like, da da da. So it's been hard to finish songs that I've started, to be honest, in lockdown, because I haven't had the kind of someone else to egg me along. But that's something that I completely need to address and try my best to overcome. I just haven't quite had the self-discipline yet, haven't respected myself enough to do it.
I guess, as like we say, we've all been trying to learn how to bake and stuff. Maybe you can learn how to finish a song.
Oh my god.
I mean, that sounds really rude.
Wish
when I say
me
it out
luck.
Loud, but I don't mean
no,
it
no,
like
no,
that.
No, honestly. I mean, I can, but do you know what I
yeah,
mean?
No,
like getting
of course
into that
you can.
Next step when you've like, you know, if I sit on Logic for more than 10 minutes, I end up like in bed for like 4 days because I'm not good enough to use it.
I know that feeling. Like, I don't even think I can get halfway through a song these days before I put it down and don't touch it again for like 4 months.
Have you ever seen the angriest guitar player in the world on YouTube?
Yeah. Is that you?
That's me. That is me. Or have you seen the angry kid that plays Monopoly?
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, like, I don't think I'm an angry person, and I'm definitely not like an aggressive person until I'm in a room with people and I do something wrong or kind of like mess something up or can't do something right. And then I just turn into Chucky. That's what my mum calls me. You know, like the mad horror doll. Yeah. That's me in the studio.
Do you think that comes from fear? Do you think that comes from, you say, when you do something wrong?
My God, completely. Like, it's from trying. Yeah. It's from never having lessons in music. It's from so many things. It's from never being in the position to kind of be taught formally as a child, like have private lessons and stuff. It's from not being able to afford even like instruments. And I don't know, you know, I remember being in Warner Music in the studio there a couple of years ago, and I'd Googled on the computer how to use a plectrum while like the guy was out of the room. And I was like, oh my God, Bessie, like what on earth are you doing? Like, why are you here? Why do you think that you have any reason to be here? You don't know how to use a plectrum. I think it was how to hold one, to be honest. And
right.
I do feel very bashful, you know, even when I'm having sound checks and stuff, and they're like, what do you want? A bit of this or a bit of reverb or a bit of that? And I've got no idea. I mean, I've learned so much along the way, and I've learned kind of the best way to deal with situations like that. And I'm really good at it, and I'm very lucky by just being myself. And it's important to be friendly. And what's really worked for me is not taking myself too seriously, which I'm sure my kind of team around me sometimes wish I would take myself a bit more seriously and kind of be like, listen to this, it's brilliant, I'm Bessie Turner. But I think that they know that they might never get that.
That's part of the draw, is the fact that, you know, you could grow up learning how to play guitar wrong, completely wrong, but it works for you. There's no right or wrong way with music. I mean, there is technically a right way and technically a wrong way, but if the sound that comes out is, you know, one of a kind or amazing or is something you enjoy, then great. Like, that's the point of it, right? Like,
exactly.
It doesn't
preach
matter.
Preach it, sister.
There are a million ways to get the same result, but they're all going to sound slightly unique because you got there a different way.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think I remember the first time listening to like finding out who this like mad Daniel Johnston guy was, and like listening to some of his stuff, and kind of just be like, could tell it was just on like this mad old little four track and was like super raw. And I don't really listen to much kind of just voice and guitar like music anymore, but like Damien Rice and Elliot Smith and kind of they're like totally inspiring, and Jose Gonzalez kind of thing, like, oh wow, like you are bloody vulnerable, and it is just you and that, and that's incredible, and maybe I can do that too.
You definitely do, from listening to what you've made and from talking to you. I mean, how do you view your mental health now versus say 5 years ago?
Where was I 5 years ago? I was 21 years old. 5 years ago was literally, that was quite mad actually. So I was nearly 22, and I'd split up with a boyfriend who, we loved each other very much. We were probably like each other's first proper kind of living together, kind of relationships, but he had quite a bad problem with alcohol, as did I at times, I think, as well. And it was a very aggressive, very chaotic, not a very nice relationship. And I think about this time 5 years ago, I just got out of that and kind of just healing from that. And I was actually in a really, really, really good space. I was probably taking medication. I've been taking fluoxetine on and off for years and years and years. And it does really help me. I'd love there to be a day when I don't take it. But for now, like, I'm more than happy. I don't feel like I'm a depressed person really when I take it, and that's incredible, and that's a reason to take it. But no, I'm much stronger. I think I'm much less judgmental. I think when you're 21, when I was 21 5 years ago, I thought I was like this madly grown up woman, like renting a flat, paying bills. But no, I don't know. I'm really happy. I'd be very proud of myself if I could see myself 5 years ago to see what I'm up to now.
How do you view medication? Because obviously you were saying that it's a very two-sided thing. But for me personally, I've spoken about this before on this podcast, actually, in the first series. I see it as a crutch, like something that helps you have a clear head to be able to then maintain a healthy lifestyle. So for me, it would be going to the gym or whatever. But without the medication, I can't motivate myself to get there. I can't
exactly
do it. And how do you view medication in the sense? Because you said when you're taking fluoxetine, you don't feel like a depressed person. What do you mean by that?
I mean, like, I don't know. I'm so, and I think what I mean by less judgmental is when I was growing up, I wanted to be anything apart from my parents. And that sounds really horrible, but like neither of them had jobs. All of my friends like came from like moneyed middle class backgrounds, and I thought that was how I should be, and that's what I wanted my future to be. And I used to see my mum taking pills every morning. And when I was a teenager going to counselling, I remember I saw this amazing psychiatrist at through Adam Brooks Hospital when I was having a lot of problems with eating, especially. And she was like, Bessie, do you not want to try them? I think they'll really just help you kind of just through this. And vividly, I was like, I never want to be like my mum or dad. Like, my mum has been taking antidepressants since she was like 12 years old, and she's still on them now. Like, I never want to do that. But then I have kind of, there must have been points where I gave in slightly, and I'm really glad that I was less judgmental and I did give them a try, because they have helped a lot. So I said, I don't want to be on them forever, but I can definitely notice when I don't take them. Sometimes I'm supposed to take 40 milligrams a day, and if I'm feeling like I'm in quite a good headspace, I kind of control them myself. Like, maybe I'll take two one day and one the next. If I ever miss a couple of days, which like does happen sometimes, especially if you're like out on the road or like gigging or like in between places, you just forget. And then I can definitely kind of feel my mood going down. And I think it's like worthiness more than anything. It's kind of confidence and like owning my life and being myself that they definitely help with. I think therapy is the best thing ever, way better than antidepressants.
Right, okay.
But unfortunately, not really in a position to be able to afford it at the moment. I looked at online stuff as well, and it's kind of 50 quid for a half an hour session or an hour session, and that's a lot of money. But if you've got it, I think it would be worth it. But I can't actually imagine being not in the room with that person either, kind of doing a Skype session.
Yeah.
I don't know how authentic I would find that, but
I don't know. To be honest, I've never tried anything like that, but it seems to me like the price difference is so, I thought it'd be so much cheaper online. It's not that different.
Yeah, I had done a little bit of research the other day, just because kind of everyone says like, oh, what are you going to do when you get out of lockdown and blah, 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 blah. Like what I really want to do when I get out of lockdown after I've had a pint in a pub is go and see an osteopath.
Yeah.
Because they're amazing. They're like witch doctors that just make you better. And I want to go and get some therapy, whether I see someone like every couple of months or kind of just by paying yourself that bit of self-respect and committing to kind of that self-love and that self-care, like however I afford it, and I'm sure I'll be able to. You make yourself afford things, don't you? You make yourself afford your water bill. Like, I'll make myself afford.
Yeah, I guess therapy. it just depends how you view the importance of something. I think like say self-care is something that is so overlooked by so many people that they wouldn't even consider spending money on you know, looking after their brain.
It's probably not fair, actually. I've been speaking about kind of therapy being expensive and stuff to people listening to this. Like, if you're kind of, I found that definitely when you're under 18 or under 16, like the support for me was amazing. There was kind of waiting lists and stuff, but there was amazing mental health services for free that I had as a teenager. And then kind of going into like these years, there's a lot of services and we're so lucky to have them. But I was offered some kind of like over the phone counselling, and that just I found didn't work for me at all. I could just be like, not that I ever would, but you could just be lying, like you don't know what the person looks like. I did give it a go, but no, there are definitely services through the NHS, but unfortunately there's just generally a bit of a long wait. And from my experience with it, it's quite, I don't know if I could cope with going through it again.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's not to this, every NHS service to do with mental health and otherwise, to be honest, that I've ever experienced has always been fantastic. It's just the frequency. It's just the how quickly it can happen, because when you're in that place, it's like, I need something now. And it's desperation.
Yeah. It's not you being demanding, and it's not you kind of wanting everything on your plate and kind of expecting the world. It's just when you are in that complete daze or funk, or can't get out of bed, or can't even speak or make eye contact with people, getting told that you're going to have to wait maybe a few weeks for a phone call, and then maybe about 3 or 4 months, you know, that is not what you want to hear. So so even though we are lucky to have the services, like, crikey, we are, it's amazing.
It's just like you were saying, every sector in the world should be doing more, and unfortunately I think the NHS are doing the absolute most that they can with they have. It's just they don't seem to be given anything, so it's a tough one. That we all know it's not the NHS, but also we do need more services, so it's like, how do you approach that?
So I feel like there's much more of a conversation about it kind of over the past few years, and I really hope that kind of schools and stuff are kind of checking in a bit with kids a bit more. I know that even kind of from having friends with children and stuff, they do like meditation in some schools, and like maybe it's only like once a month, or maybe it's only once, but at least kids are being introduced to that. That's, you know, quite an amazing thing.
Yeah. And lastly, what advice would you give to anyone else that might be struggling at the moment?
Let people love you. I've always been really bad at that, but it's the best thing you can ever let people do. And it's kind of, you know, somebody might be listening to this and feeling really alone and like they've got nobody that does, but you know, whether it's even kind of going to the shop and just being like, oh, hi, how are you? The lady behind the counter or the man behind the counter. And I don't know, I get my favourite moments of the day are like little bits of small talk with people and, you know, comparing what this lady's got in the reduced section of Tesco's, you know, kind of even that I think is a little act of love, like just conversation and like human contact is amazing. Or if you have a dog, just that you're made.
I can contest to that. That does help.
Dogs are antidepressants. If you've got a dog, don't worry about anything. You'll be all right.
Funny, isn't it? Because you do, as you go through things, me and my dog, you just feel like you've been to battle together.
It's, oh my gosh. You know,
and they've just been there the whole time. And yeah, they're really, really great. I don't think there is anything in the world that is better than a dog.
I know. I don't have one at the moment.
Well, I've got one. So if we ever meet, you can meet my dog.
Yay! What kind of dog is it?
A French bulldog.
Oh, sweet.
She's a rescue.
What's her name?
Minnie.
Do you know what? My dad liked that name for me as a baby. But I'm so glad I wasn't called Minnie because I was bullied for being a bit chubby. So imagine being called Minnie, but being really chubby and the trauma. So thanks for calling me Bessie instead, guys.
Well, Bessie, thank you so much for your time. And thanks for the chat.
No, not at all.
So there it is. Thank you so much to Bessie for speaking to me. And if you are somebody that is struggling right now, please reach out to somebody. We do this podcast to share stories and we are in no way mental health experts. So please reach out to your GP, visit rethink.org or any other services out there that can provide you with any help you might need or somebody you know. That is it for today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will be back very, very soon.